Subtitle to my talk today is look at the potential trade-offs between the nitrous oxide emissions from these systems I'll be looking at, and also the trade-off of that with crop yield along a nitrogen fertility gradient. So first of all, it's a very familiar graph I'm assuming of the rapid increase in nitrous oxide emissions over the last 1,000 years. You see that familiar hockey stick curve coming from about 1750 to 1800 with these rapid increase in emissions up to about 320 parts per billion at the moment. So alongside that rapid increase in emission of N2O, what other concerns do we have about N2O? It's a long-lived greenhouse gas. Current estimates suggest over 100 years residence in the atmosphere. The global anthropic emissions of this gas are equivalent to about 1 petagram of carbon per year. And most notably, 1 ton of avoided emissions of N2O would reduce the requirement for effectively about 300 tons of CO2 sequestration based on the global warming potential of the nitrous oxide gas compared to carbon dioxide. So where do we get a lot of N2O from? As you can see from the pie chart, approximately 50% are from agricultural soils. That's 50% of the anthropic sources of N2O. Some other basic information that everyone sure knows, that nitrous oxide is formed primarily through nitrification and denitrification. There are, of course, other processes which produce N2O. At the moment, our best predictor of the soil N2O flux is actually the soil nitrogen availability. And as a result of that, currently, total nitrogen inputs are used to estimate the soil nitrous oxide contributions to national gas inventories. And indeed, the IPCC uses the total nitrogen inputs as an estimate. So I'm going to show you here a couple of graphs which sort of set the scientific scene for the work that we're doing, looking at the N2O flux and crop yield versus nitrogen rate application. On the left-hand graph is a relatively standard yield increase with nitrogen rate addition increase, and you see at a point in time where adding amounts of N really don't increase that yield very greatly. There's a leveling off, a plateauing of the yield, and eventually an actual decrease in yield with N rate addition. What you have on the right-hand graph is a nitrogen rate addition with N2O flux, and there's a linear response. The IPCC now use, I believe, 1%, plus or minus 1%, as a way of predicting the nitrous oxide flux emitted from soils as a result of the amount of N added. So that's a linear response, independent of the amount of N added, from the very lowest amount of N added up to the very highest amount of N added. What the theory would predict from the left-hand graph, though, one of our predictions for this work that I'm going to present, is that, in fact, there's a nonlinear response of nitrous oxide emissions to N addition, so that you see there's a deviation from linearity. Typically, we hope to see at a sort of a medium to high rate of N addition. And as a result of that, what you would see with that deviation from linearity is a larger increase in the nitrous oxide flux addition that wouldn't be predicted from the linear responses proposed by the IPCC. And indeed, the implication for that from these two graphs is that a substantial decrease in nitrous oxide flux could be achieved with little yield impact. So by reducing the amount of N addition by a substantial amount, you're not affecting the yield to any degree, and you may also get quite a large reduction in nitrous oxide flux. So how are we measuring nitrous oxide flux? Most normally, people would use static chambers. Manual measurement of the fluxes. On the top left-hand graph there, you have the day of the year against the nitrous oxide flux emissions, and that's about a 55-day period. And in that period of time, there's about 8 or 10 sampling times for nitrous oxide flux from static chambers. So you do get a picture as a good first approximation of the amounts of nitrous oxide being emitted. The graph on the right shows what the system we'll be using, an automated system. So there's a 2-day period along the x-axis there, again with nitrous oxide flux on the y-axis, and what you're seeing is a much greater temporal resolution, about 16 sampling times within that 2-day period. So you can see the very large temporal dynamics within that 2-day period, which you're not going to see when you sample event-based sampling, for instance, following rainfall. And people would typically sample on a weekly or a bi-weekly or even a monthly basis and then extrapolate or interpolate the data. So here you're getting a much higher temporal resolution. In order to get that, as I talked about previously with one of the earlier speakers, automated chambers will help you provide this needed resolution. So you see on the bottom left-hand photo there, we have an automated chamber system linked to a mobile trailer in the field. And I'll talk a little bit more about that in detail. So, to sum up, the objective of the work we're looking at is to test the hypothesis that N2O fluxes in row crop agriculture can be significantly reduced by lowering the N fertilizer input with little or almost no loss in crop productivity. So we're predicting, as I mentioned earlier, incremental additions in the nitrogen fertilizer along an N fertility gradient will lead to nonlinear increases in N2O fluxes, particularly at medium to high levels of N addition. And also the fluxes of N2O will be low along this N fertility gradient until the yields no longer increase. In effect, the crop is now not needing the N. Any extra N that would be in the system would potentially be available for the processes to produce nitrous oxide. And then you would see a rapidly increasing flux of N2O as a result of this. So just a brief overview of the site location. It's the Kellogg Biological Station LTER site in southwest Michigan, not too far from Battle Creek in Kalamazoo. It's an overview of aerial photography, and the highlighted red box is the main KBS LTR site, and on the bottom right a photo of the kind of environment we're working in. And there's some details there on the mean rainfall and the mean temperature, about 90 centimeters a year, about 10 degrees Celsius average temperature, 50 Fahrenheit. It's a loam soil, just over 1% carbon at the surface. So this is a more detail on the actual nitrogen fertility gradient. There are actually 8 blocks in this system. 4 are rain-fed, 4 are irrigated. I'm using block 2 here, which is a rain-fed block, and as you can see, I'm using 6 of the 9 available treatments. The 9 treatments are randomized within each block, so I'm using a range of treatments between, as I've labeled there, F1 to F8, that's 0 application of N, right up to 246 kilograms of N per hectare, and the numbers highlighted in yellow are the actual treatments I'll be using. And some brief agronomic details there. This year it's a winter wheat crop. There's a corn, soybean, winter wheat rotation in the site. The winter wheat, this was planted last year, last November. The fertilizer was applied, ammonium nitrate, in early May. And the actual crop was harvested in mid-July. So as I'm talking about the actual sampling protocol, as with static chamber protocols, you effectively are trying to provide a gas-tight seal over the soil surface. With our system, we have a metal base inserted into the soil and a screw-down metal lid chamber, which can be automatically closed and opened. During that period of closure, we take samples, we calculate the flux rates, and as I say, it's sampled continually, 24/7, 365 a year, ideally. A little bit more detail about that. Our system is flexible in that you can change these closing periods and opening periods. Previously, the work we've done this summer between May, June, and July, chambers have been closed for 100 minutes, 4 samples within 100 minutes at a roughly 20-minute intervals. After each run-by of the 6 samples, there's 2 calibration standards, obviously so we can calculate the peak areas and calculate the fluxes from that. And then after that 100 minutes of closure, there's also 100 minutes of the chamber's been open. And then they're closed again to repeat that cycle. And you can see in the middle photograph there is the gas control unit system that we've currently got running, which is a modification from the one that we used over the summer. Effectively the same process, but just a little bit more refined, I guess, would be the word to use. So here's some initial results, and this is a period of time, roughly 45 days after the end fertilization event in early May and prior to the harvest event in mid-June. So you can see that I've only included 3 of the 6 treatments here. The green treatment here is the 0 level of N fertilization. The red treatment is the intermediate, the F5 level of N fertilization. And the yellow is the highest level, the F8, the 268 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare. And what you can hopefully see here is this incredibly dynamic temporal variety in all treatments, irrespective of N addition, and indeed also with 0 N addition as well. You're getting these peaks and troughs, high temporal dynamics, which you would never see by just day sampling from static chambers. So it gives you a really good idea of the temporal dynamics of the system. You also hopefully see that with the higher level of N addition, particularly the 268, you're getting some prolonged high fluxes here compared with the intermediate and again with the, the 0 N fertilization. As a slight aside, you also might see, and we can maybe talk about it later, but certainly there's some actual negative fluxes, some uptake of N2O being recorded in all the treatments. As I say, this is an indication, this is 3 of the 6 treatments that we're using. So, taking an average of the N2O fluxes over that period of time, that 45-day period of time between May and July, we get this average nitrous oxide flux, grams per nitrous oxide N of hectare per day on the y-axis, along with the fertiliser application, those six treatments I've been talking about. So the best fit for those points there is indeed not a linear relationship, although a linear relationship does show a reasonable agreement, but it's actually a non-linear relationship. And as predicted, at the higher levels of N addition, you're seeing this increase in flux. In this case, from F6 and F8 onwards, levels of fertilizers at about 134 and 168 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare applied. Again, that's different from what the IPCC would predict. They have, a linear relationship along the entire levels of N addition. So just to look at some brief yield data, this is the winter wheat yield that we got on the 12th of July. It's good to see that it's following that curve we predicted. It's leveling off at a level around about 101 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare. And what you see here again is the fertilizer application on the x-axis and the grain yield per kilograms of hectare on the y-axis. Each of these red triangles represents the F-level treatment. So we have all nine here, ranging from F1 to the left, F2, F3, etc., all the way through to F9. And you see that the point at about F4, which is equivalent to 101 kilograms of nitrogen, you really are seeing no statistical increase in yield. So bear that in mind, that point, 101 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare. So when we actually plot the yield in metric tons per grains per hectare of the six treatments which I measured the nitrous oxide emissions from, and plotted against, on the y-axis, the average nitrous oxide flux again in grams of nitrous oxide N per hectare per day, we see a relationship which I could like to say it's an exponential relationship, but what you see at a point in time at which the grain yield is maximized around about this 4 to 4.2 metric tons of grain per hectare, you see a point in time at which after that yield is maximized, any additional N, particularly in the F6 treatments with the high 168 level of N, and especially in the F8 with 246 kilograms of N added, you're getting a much more rapid increase in the nitrous oxide flux emissions. This is an average, as I say, over this period of time, this 45 days that we measured. So what does that lead us to conclude? Against the IPCC, I believe that we can show, or at least there's evidence to suggest, that there is a non-linear relationship between nitrous oxide fluxes and N fertilizer addition, in particular at medium to high levels of N addition. There are low N fluxes at zero and low N fertilization, but again, there are sharply increasing N2O fluxes at the medium and high N fertilization levels. So as a further conclusion, certainly there's an economic incentive, an environmental incentive to be very well aware of how much N you're adding to these systems. Not only can you use less N fertilizer, which obviously will be an economic incentive to the farmer, you're not really getting much of a yield reduction, as you can see. That point in time at 101 kilograms of N per hectare, basically the crop yield was stagnating. It wasn't increasing statistically. Also, as an effect of that, environmentally, you're getting potentially a much reduced N2O flux from the systems. So as I mentioned, N2 fluxes are low when the N fertilizer rates are at or below an optimum crop yield, and these fluxes then increase 2 to 3 times higher, and indeed more in some situations, higher above the N fertilizer rate at which the yields are optimized. So I think there's a real potential to look at this linear relationship again and then look at different systems and really appreciate the fact that N2O fluxes can be dramatically reduced without decreasing crop yield by reducing the amounts of N addition to these systems. Thank you very much. Well, a previous reincarnation of that graph showed many more negative fluxes. I went through all the chromatograms and data and took out lots of positive and negatives, ones which I wasn't happy with, which didn't have good R-squared values, which didn't have statistically significant slope differences from zero, conducted some F-tests, and those negative fluxes are there, in my opinion. They're about 10% of the total number of incubations we did over that period of time, and you tend to suggest that maybe a wet system for denitrification would be coarse, maybe nitrous oxide being denitrified to N2. However, this was a very dry year on our field site. It was a drought year, the worst drought in about 20 years. So if possibly some form of aerobic denitrification or nitrified denitrification, we're even going to check to see of changes in barometric pressure, whether there's any sort of a effectively removal from the soil under the chamber so that it's dispersed up and above outside of the chamber. At the moment, we haven't looked at the processes, so I don't want to say too much and speculate, but it's certainly some very interesting results, which I'll hopefully try to reproduce in the future by running this system over the year in different crops next year with maize. So it's an ongoing question. Yeah, the yield. It's obviously consistent across the treatments. The yields were taken. The strips are of where the N fertilizers are applied. They're 90 feet long by 15 feet wide. So the crop yield was harvested from a central 5 feet section of that plot. But you're right, indeed. I mean, there was no what we had there. We also have these extensions. Onto the bases, if I could go back, I would show you that where we have the metal base in the soil, and whilst the crop is growing, this year in particular with the wheat crop, we're able to put an extension plastic tube on top, about a metre high, 30 odd inches high, and on top of that, which we put the opening and closing lids. So we were really not affecting the growth of the crop, the wheat, this year, once the wheat was reaching a point in time at which it was starting to touched the top of the closing lid, we added this extension on and allowed it to grow alongside with it. So obviously that changes the volume we're looking at, but we obviously took that into account when we calculated the fluxes. With corn, you might have a problem encompassing a 9 foot plant, but certainly with wheat at 3 feet, we're able to really not affect the growth of it too much, or as little as we can in that respect. Yeah, how would I go back here?
I think you can go with the...
Right click?
The two of them is very good.
Oh, okay, I got you.
The NPC is there.
This one.
The NPC is 1.25%
of... I think it's 1% of the N added to a system is seen to be emitted as N2O. Sure. It is, as I said, as I did mention, there is a linear fit to it. This, having done and fitted a number of lines to it, this fit is better. You're right to say it. I'm not disagreeing that a linear fit would have a reasonable agreement. However, this is a better fit. It's a non-real relationship, and especially at even higher levels of N. And we need to fill in some more detail. So we've got 6 of the 9 treatments here. If I'd had more chambers, I'd have done it all 9. I'd have replicated the system. But I'm pretty confident that at the higher levels of N that there is a deviation from linearity, but that's a disagreement we could have. Sure, yes, indeed, and the best fit was this non-linear relationship, particularly at the higher levels of N. Yes,
somewhat artificial, not even, I would argue, practical at all. In that, so you might have that within a reasonable handle.
Yeah, I think that there is certainly a low level of the flux at the low levels of N fertilizer addition, which you could fit a linear relationship in. I don't disagree with that, but at the higher levels, there's definitely a deviation away from that. So again, it's an interpretation, but I believe there's evidence to show that it's nonlinear at those levels. That is just from the 6 treatments that I did this year with the automated chambers. There's earlier papers done with static chambers by Phil Robertson and Claire McSweeney over a 3-year period of time with corn. And in that paper, they do show similar relationships. They saw at the same point in 101 kilograms of N, this plateauing of the yield. They showed 134 kilograms of N, this rapid increase in nitrous oxide emissions. There's no errors on that. However, with the temporal resolution that we're using, in future we will duplicate the system up. But this agrees with past data. This is the preliminary results that we're trying to get out here and try to confirm previous static chamber results. So in future there will be error bars on this. But as I say, previous results with crop over a 3-year period, varying environmental factors, rainfall, temperature, showed similar results with crop yield, with N addition, with nitrous oxide flux emissions. So the idea being that we'll introduce this into different systems, try and replicate it, try to input the data we receive into the models that we're going to be developing as well. So it's an ongoing process, and this is the preliminary information on these automated chamber results.
One last question. Just suggested from a final sort of nonlinear increase of nitrous oxide fluxes with a nitrogen rating in the reservoir experiment, where we find this nonlinear increase of
good news. Thanks. Yeah, sure.
Going
yeah.
In the right direction, because effectively this 1% is a rough estimation.
It's a first approximation, and it serves its purpose. I'm just arguing that there may be needs at these higher levels of N to sort of take that into account.
And we should never forget about the water cycle into that. Like, we put nitrogen, and if you have a bit of water shortage, okay, you will have a reduction also of N2O, but your yield will be lower.
Yeah. We have measurements for soil moisture content, temperature, barometric pressure. I haven't presented it here, but we are able to measure all these parameters, and in future we've also got ammonium and nitrate levels in the soil. We could talk about it a little later as well. So I'm just, as I say, presenting this somewhat controversial relationship, as I'm finding out.
One last question, Byron.
Maybe I think probably this function will occur where the variable is soil types and climate.
Well, yeah, I mean, the soil type, as I say, it potentially will. I'm hoping the relationship will hold true, though. Yeah, I mean, we can't take this system to every single site, and that's not the point. You were talking about your modeling system. Yeah, we're going to try and verify with this highly temporal, resolute automated chambers, confirming what we found with the static chambers. And then there's some other crops next year. We're going to do corn, and we'll maybe, depending on financial situation, take that out of different crops. So look at it in different soils. But as I say, that 3-year study with the static chambers was under different environmental conditions. Some of it was rain-fed, some of it was irrigated. So we've already got a bit of variety, and this relationship still holds true, as we're seeing, certainly on the site that the KBS LTER. And I'm not certain that's a particularly special type of soil. So, but you're right, we have to test it, predict it, put it into models, and then hopefully this relationship will hold true, and I believe there's real potential for it.
Okay, with that, we're going to give you a hand.
Thank you.